Siren Radio.
Siren 107.3.
Very, very exciting in more ways than one, you might well say, especially when you can actually add to the mix.
Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the midweek drive
and the midweek drive morning edition
remains.
Thank you, Fia van den Bogart, on behalf of obviously all True Blues everywhere, for Nathan Ake, Dutch footballer, of course, who's part of the victorious Pep Guardiola championship-winning side, which we'll be alluding to as the whole thing goes. I know you're a big Nathan Ake fan, presumably in bulk in the Netherlands.
Definitely, yes. This is, of course, not the first time that I hear his name.
Well, we don't know it exactly. It's very important from that point of view. Of course, when we're talking about the Champions League, doubtless, Anna Lewis, you're thinking, are you speaking about some kind of association football game, or is it rather like Bill Shankly once said, football is not a matter of life or death, it's more important than that?
Yeah, well, here it's a rugby sort of thing. You know, they're very keen on rugby matches rather than football, but, you know, it's everyone's to their own, really.
Precisely. This is very important from that perspective. And, of course, in North Carolina, because she's back in Carolina, where the world is so much finer, perhaps, it's Jessica Burtis. How are you, Jessica?
I am doing pretty well, enjoying the sunshine back home.
Excellent. Well, it's another one of those wonderful Newark Book Festival themed Midweek Drive live pieces that we're putting together, including a 9-year-old author, Grace, who'll be talking about Dogtopia, to be precise, how she became a child author aged 9. Actually, she might have been 8 when she actually became a child author, but that's certainly going to be a key aspect of the whole sequence. We've also got a look at the stars with Starlinks, and the whole aspect of the Starlinks planetarium will be focused in a whole range of key elements within the world. Plus, we might indeed have Phil Leonis joining us, because he said he will probably knock at the Zoom door at some time during the course of the whole sequence. That's very exciting. But, Kathy, it looks as though William Coles is not going to be able to respond, probably gutted by last week's Little League Baseball scenario, coupled with the two-header that following the Ascot tie. So it's pretty much a quartet of quality that will be at the other end of your cryptic crossword clue or challenge.
Well, I'm heartbroken, obviously, for William McColl's absence. He did not call, write, email. It's truly a tragedy, but we will survive, because there's a beautiful team of ladies I see on the screen that I think will be able to figure this out. So shall we begin our crossword clue?
I think that's what we must do at 5 minutes past 5, otherwise we'll go to a zoo.
Absolutely. So the clue for today is duty free, and it is 5 letters, and the third letter is a T.
Third letter is a T, duty free. Anna Lewis, any thoughts about that?
It's a major moment in time. Brain's a bit soft. Because of the heat, but yeah, duty free.
Well, wear sunscreen. Yet. That's what we say. Wear sunscreen, yeah. Anna. Very important, very critical. You don't want to go out without sunscreen, and it's important that it's worn beforehand. We'll find out more about that with Dr. Hiva Fashihi, who'll be talking about the importance of wearing sunscreen. That's tomorrow, though. In the Netherlands, clearly gearing up for the battle between the Netherlands and Croatia in the UEFA Nations League this evening, which will be taking place, I think this is British time. We've got 7:45, so it might well be 8:45 in the Netherlands. But have you any thoughts as to Kathy's cryptic crossword clue, Fia?
No, I don't know.
No. Okay, Jessica, it looks as though it's all on you. No pressure, but we know that you've got the abilities to come up with something special for this. Any thoughts?
No pressure, yeah. I'm still thinking. This is a tricky one. I know we can figure it out, but I think we need a little more time to ponder.
Well, I tell you what, we need a little more time to ponder after we actually have a listen to a Spanish individual who obviously brought great joy and happiness to at least one member of the Midweek Drive Live on Saturday night.
City looking to work it to the right-hand side this time. Here's Bernardo Silva. Could he be the man? Not to be. Rodri! 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 At last, City in dreamland! 68th minute, Rodri finds the goal. They were just beginning to wilt into Milan.
Okay, I mean, I appreciate we could go for the whole thing here, and I'm tempted to, but I appreciate, you know, we're not quite in the Manchester area, but for those of us who were around, indeed, at the time when Anna Lewis was indeed a fellow student at the University of Lincoln, and I was off interviewing the likes of Paul Power, etc., great success, great happiness there. So good news. Good news in more ways than one. Has that helped, Jessica? Has that given you any more time to actually begin to come up with an answer?
You know, I am still struggling with this. I'm trying to think of anything. You know, duty-free is in, like, the airport duty-free with no taxes. Yes. Or is it, you know, duty-free is in, like, you think, know, it just...
Think about what you just said.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you said it, Jessica.
Taxless.
Yeah.
But five letters. Yeah, Fia, what do you think?
Well, it's two words. No tax.
Excellent. It is no tax. Round of applause. Round of applause.
Put together. Again, proving that just like Nathan Ake, a superb member of the whole sequence. Sophia, does Korfball continue during the course of the summer, or have you actually come to the end of the season?
Well, we've actually come to the end of the season. Tonight is our last match. Mm-hmm. And actually... like, we could end up being the first in the league. So this is
what
quite...
you mean? You could end up. I mean,
we will. I mean, we're going to be champions tonight.
Think about what Pep Guardiola would be saying in terms of getting that motivation. It may be exhausting. You may well have the open top bus tour to actually cope with as you head through the ways of bulk, etc. But you know, it'd be worth it. It will be worth it. And of course, you've got the midweek drive very much following that whole process. And inevitably, you also get
Jessica Burtis flying the flag for North Carolina across the solar system.
Did you know that in 1991, a bill was passed by the North Carolina Senate changing the official proportions of the state flag from a length one-third more than its width to a length one-half more than its width?
Wow, there must not be a lot going on in the North Carolina Senate for them to have that kind of time on their hands.
Spontaneous. Okay, Anna, what things have you been getting up to this week? Which graveyards have you been visiting? What things have you been effectively working through?
Yes, interesting week. Kew Gardens Saturday was like one of the hottest days we've had in London. Predictable storm at 4 o'clock that never happened, thank God. I met up with... five other school contemporaries who we've known each other since we were 11, because we were the last year to do what was known as the 11 plus. And six of us met up and had a picnic at Kew, praying that the rain wouldn't happen, and it didn't. So yeah, six of us got together, and it was a lovely gathering. And Kew Gardens, I have to recommend, if anybody comes up to London, they have to go to Kew. It is spectacular.
Spelt K-E-W for any American souls who might sort of think, Kew, where's it all about? So thumbs up for Kew Gardens then. Actually, Afia, have you ever visited Kew Gardens?
No, I've never heard of it, I think. Mm-hmm. So I should definitely go once I'm in London again. Yeah.
And Jessica, have you also paid a visit to Kew Gardens? Or is it a case of, no, you've had to limit your time to 10 Downing Street and Buckingham Palace because that's the kind of executive company you keep?
No, we went to Hyde Park. Me and my friends biked around Hyde Park and picnicked there. But we wanted to go to Kew. We just didn't have time. So it's an excuse to go back, I guess.
Hmm. Oh, it will work. Kathy, Kew?
You know, I've only ever made it to the train station, the subway station. That's by
right,
it.
Right.
I wanted to get there, but I immediately had to run for my next train. So that just means I got time. Looks like that's a plan for this summer.
Always problematic. Victoria Simmons sending her best, but I think she's out and about doing various other bits and pieces in France. She's also going to be sorting out a number of other key things, but that's life in its own way. What about North Carolina, Jessica? If we ever get a chance to actually fly over to your own particular neck of the woods, what should we be checking out?
Well, I think, you know, there's so many things. We have the beach on one coast, we have the mountains on the other. So it really depends if you're more of a beach person or a mountain person, because you can go hiking in the Appalachian Mountains, drive along the Blue Ridge Trail, you can go skiing, or you can go to the beach, spend some time in the Outer Banks, have some seafood, go sailing. It's just anything you want, really.
There are so many happy and vital things to actually work through. Now, you might well actually say, why are we actually talking about finance and such like stuff? Well, holiday ATM transactions can be very problematic in all sorts of ways. And I feel it's only right for us to take a moment in time, explore the wonderment of how you can sort of make a good saving when it comes to dealing with this whole notion of cash transactions by having a few words with Alana Parsons, indeed from the ATM organisation Caxton.
Okay, so you may be the sort of person who doesn't really mind losing £35.16 on average every time you actually have a summer holiday. You may think, what the hey, just throw it away from that point of view. But that is the average which every British soul actually who engages in ATM and transaction charges when they're on holiday will be losing £35.16. You could get a decent meal for that. Let's find out some of the reasons why that's the case and maybe some possible tips to actually prevent you actually shedding £35 worth of finance, etc., by speaking to Caxton's fantastic ACE coordinator, Alana Parsons. How are you, Alana?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. So this particular aspect, as I say, £35 every trip when you're dealing with ATM and bank card transaction fees, is that yet again just a case of how, you know, when it comes to travelling, we're very naive. And although UK residents have made 24.9 million visits abroad, that's a lot of money to be lost, basically, on average.
Yeah, it really is. And I think, you know, it's not just a case of people being naive about it. I think the landscape has changed over the years, you know, and I think, you know, I go back 10 years and people probably thought, you know, holiday money was just what the holiday money was, you know, and you didn't come back with any at all. Whereas I think, you know, recent economic trends and the state of the markets at the moment with food prices rising, what we've experienced with gas prices, and just the general state of the economy and how things have been going, especially since the pandemic, I think people are just a little bit more savvy and a little bit more aware of where their pennies are going. So I think it's much more on everyone's radar at the moment than it would have been before.
Now, one of the things you've done at Caxton has been to produce a range of top tips to actually start dealing with this. And it's a bit like that whole notion of, you know, we were aware of roaming charges and costs with respect to mobile phones, etc. But number one, of course, is start budgeting for your trip early on.
Yeah, that's right. It sounds really simple, but people tend to think of these things quite late on in their journey. You know, I think when you think holiday, you think, right, flights, accommodation, sometimes, you know, what tours are we going to do? What's the agenda? And then typically, as you're running out the door with passport in hand to the airport, I think people tend to start thinking, right, I needed to get some cash for this trip or some money for this trip. So I think if people can just start to think about the financial aspect of it and they're spending money just a little bit earlier. So do it, you know, when you're thinking of your flights and accommodation, start thinking of spending money then. And that way it's a good way not only to steadily build up your travel savings to ensure you can get the most out of it, but also you'd be surprised not just at how quickly those deposits over time add up, but just it gives you a bit more opportunity to scope the best time to purchase currency, as well as, you know, the best way of doing it as well.
Yeah, I was intrigued to see that many people weren't aware that using the currency exchange desks at airports, probably the worst decision you can make unless you want the worst exchange rate possible. Again, that goes back to planning in advance, really, whether you're going for euros or any other currency. Presumably make sure it's done and dusted with banks well before you're due to head off.
Yeah, absolutely. And as much as I think, you know, for the last good few years, everyone has spoken about how terrible it is to use those bureau de change at the airport. Every time I've been on holiday, the queues are still just as long. So we obviously need to get these smart tips out to more people.
Mm. We talked about, of course, losing finance, but let's talk about the card or ATM charges. I mean, that's something which a lot of us kind of, yes, we see £3 going on this one, £3 going on that one. We might sort of think initially, oh, that's a bit annoying, etc. But you know, we do need to look at ensuring that maybe we're not using automatic transaction machines as much as we might be tempted to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a few things to play here. So we were really surprised when we conducted the research. I mean, we've been servicing our customers for 20 years now, and it's just crazy that people are still being charged as much as they are to access their own money. And especially at the moment, you know, every penny counts. And it's, I think we used to see over time, the ATM machines themselves didn't really charge, the odd one did, and it was more so around the provider of the account that charged. But I think over the last 3 to 5 years, you're very hard pressed to find an ATM that doesn't charge as well. So you're sort of having a double whammy, because the ATM owner will typically charge €3 to €5 now. I think it's fairly common to see charges as high as that. And then you have the account provider who's adding a percentage or a set fee on top. So actually, you know, if you are someone who wants to take cash out over your trip, those, you know, they could easily stack up to, you know, a couple of nice cocktails at the beach or some ice creams for the kids. It really does make a difference.
Yeah. And actually, in bold print, you've actually put always pay in the local currency. So don't actually look when you're using your debit or credit cards to say, OK, we'll do that scenario. So again, something which seasoned travellers may be aware of. But certainly for students and indeed people who are just making a quick trip over abroad, et cetera, that is quite an important tip, isn't it?
It really is. And I think this is more so relevant for prepaid currency cards like the Caxton card, where you can actually purchase the currency in advance, because, you know, these ATMs and shops and restaurants as well, you know, it's just down to the payment mechanism that they're using. If you have euros preloaded onto a card and you want to purchase something in euros, that's when you want to pay in the local currency. A lot of these machines, they try and, I don't know whether they, you know, trick you on purpose, but they tend to use double negatives, which make you think, oh, actually, I might need to do this in sterling because that's kind of what it's telling me to do. But people don't realize they're then going to go through another set of exchange rates and lose out more. So if you have currency on your card and that's the currency you're paying in, it really is crucial that, you know, you select to pay in the local currency and just to avoid any further fees.
The critical line, of course, travel smart and spend smarter, which presumably brings us around to how you could conceivably eliminate the headache completely of your finances by getting, as we said, a Caxton currency card. So share with us, Alana, why a Caxton currency card, which can be preloaded, can be a really useful help with respect to this when you're dealing with, obviously, currency exchange and indeed not being ripped off on holiday.
Sure. So the Caxton prepaid currency card is a fantastic tool for taking abroad with you to manage your spending funds. We can hold up to 15 different currencies on the card. And what it enables you to do is monitor the exchange rate and buy that at a good time for you. It also enables you to do things. We have a travel savings plan. So you could say, you know, you want to save £300 over the next 3 months and just do £100 a month, and we'll automatically convert it for you at the rate at the time, but take the funds over the following 3 months, which means it just helps you with your budgeting. The other great thing about these travel cards, particularly the Caxton card, is it's just like having a debit card in the country you're traveling to. So you would use it in the same way you would your UK debit card. You know, it's free to use in shops, bars, restaurants, and even at ATM fees, we make sure, even if the ATM owner charges, we have never in our 20 years charged for ATM fees. So it's just, again, every penny counts in these situations. And there's just opportunities for savings everywhere you look with the card.
Thank you very much, Alana Parsons from Caxton. OK, let's just put it to the team. Jessica, you're a key traveller. Have you ever considered doing prepaid card charges? Or is it a case of, oh, I don't mind losing £34 per transaction? What the hey? It's just chump change.
I have not ever used one. I try to find a different way of paying, especially with taking cash out, getting it exchanged first, because I'm sure Kathy and Fia understand when you go to a different country, and especially with UK, because pounds are typically worth a lot more than, you know, the US dollar or Canadian dollar or euro. And so when we look at prices for clothes or something, for example, it seems so much cheaper. And then I think converting it first and like calculating to see how much it is in your own currency helps with like buying things. Otherwise, you just spend a fortune on trips.
Victoria Simmons, jumping back and forth, commuting from France to England and back again. Welcome to the Midweek Drive Live. Any thoughts on currency exchanges, or is it just a case of I leave that to my brokers?
No, I'm quite lucky because I've got an English account and a Euro account. And if I want to, my mum and I have now got a system that she has some money in England in her bank account. And if I want English money, she'll transfer it to me. And then I'll look up on Google and see what the conversion rate is. And I'll put it from my Euro account into her Euro account.
Nice.
And so we've kind of managed it on our own scale. But I know when we've been to America or something, you have to take out bulk money.
Yeah, always. dreadful scenario. Anna, any challenges when it comes to your travels and journeys across the years?
Well, as I'm getting older, I'm traveling less. Mm-hmm. But what I can say is in the olden days, when I was a young person, the thing to do was to buy traveller's checks.
Oh, dear.
And I don't know if those wretched things still exist,
No. But
they're just so archaic. And the idea is, and worse, I've seen people on trains in Europe many years ago, stuffing currency down their bras.
Really?
So as to when they were going through, and not anymore since the Euro currency, but yeah, people stuffing cash into their bras when they're going between countries and borders. So I think this currency card sounds a brilliant way of doing it, and I certainly will look into it. Mm. It sounds like a sensible thing to do.
Called infomercial, courtesy of the Midweek Drive Live. Kathy, I mean, Ukraine, any bras stuffed full of currency there just to actually help you cross the border?
No.
What you said there?
You have to remember the currency is so low in Ukraine.
Yeah.
So what
you'd
you
have to have a very large cup size.
Truly. I'm trying to think, I always do it by getting cash out in Poland. Because they have Ukrainian currency. Mm-hmm. So I end up needing Polish currency. So I'll take that out first. And that's easy to acquire in the UK. And then just change it to cash. And cash is appreciated in Ukraine. But, you know, I have my, I don't want to promote other companies here, but I got my rewards card. so my rewards card is my emergency card. And it hasn't failed me yet. Every country accepts it. And you do not need to notify anyone or any bank about it.
Fia, what's the scenario in Netherlands? And of course, having just been a student over in England for a time, were you concerned about the currency exchange things? I mean, you know, back in the day, of course, when we were all part of the Euro, that was, well, we never have been part of the Euro, of course, in Britain, so perhaps that's part of the problem. But still.
I was like, when?
Yeah, thanks. Very true. Anyway, Fia, thoughts for yourself?
Well, Netherlands is always very lucky because when I went to England, of course, but when I traveled to other countries, it was always the Euro. So I never really had to deal with the currency thing. So I was just like, oh, I can pay here and it's fine. So when I went to England, it was a struggle. And of course, like Jessica said, it's a lot more expensive when you think about it. So especially coming back, I was like, oh, this was way too expensive. Yeah. So, that's why I had to work a lot, but it was really something to think about. And really, like you said, really, no one really thinks about it unless they're currently on their travel.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the actual total, the number of amount that UK holidaymakers could be wasting each year, £60 million, basically, or indeed losing, and from that point of view, each person losing an average of £35.16 on ATM and transaction charges. Per person, per holiday. Well, thinking about it. Okay, maybe it's time to actually have a staycation, although the exchange rates between Lincoln and other parts of the world, very, very strange. Fia, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
Yes, it was great. Thank you.
Informative. And, of course, we wish your side very well as they go up against Croatia. Any predictions for a score in the semi-final of the UEFA Nations League this evening?
I don't know. We'll just have to see. But there's an even more important match tonight. So, I mean, that one's...
This is true. I mean, obviously, right? The semi-final of the UEFA Nations League pales in comparison to the sporting wonderment of Balk going up against whom?
I think it's Heerenveen again. So.
Yeah, there we are. It's Heerenveen or Heerenveen.
Heerenveen.
Yeah. Oh, good. Marvellous. And Anna, has it been good for you?
It has indeed. Thank you very much.
Splendid. We must come and do a location report at Kew Gardens.
Yes.
Think about that. You know,
absolutely.
That's how we headed down to London once more time. And who else is likely to be... Well, Victoria, are you still able to be with us for a wee while now?
Yep, For the next one, definitely.
Likewise, Jessica, which is wonderful. Next up, we look at the stars. We explore the stars. We see what's actually happening with respect to the New York Book Festival and Starlink's planetarium, hopefully with Thomas Morton, maybe once in a blue moon.
Blue moon. You saw me standing alone, without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own. Blue moon, you knew just what I was there for. You heard me saying prayer for someone I really could care for. And then there suddenly appeared before me the only one my arms could ever hold. I heard somebody whisper, please adore me. When I looked, the moon had turned to gold. Blue moon, now I'm no longer alone, without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own. And then there suddenly appeared before me the only one my arms will ever hold. I heard somebody whisper, please adore me. And when I looked, the moon had turned to gold. Blue moon, without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own, without a love. Without a love of my own.
Dean Martin, with his own unique interpretation of Blue Moon. Well, of course, there is a astronomical reason as to why blue moons would actually occur, and a bit like the whole notion of human beings reflecting the light onto our other friends as we shine a little light on us. I'm sure such things could be discussed by the Starlink's Planetarium. And who should be with us now on the Midweek Drive Live from the Starlink's Planetarium but the awesome Thomas Morton. How are you, Thomas?
I'm great, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's great to connect with your good self. And we had complete faith that the link would work perfectly well on that sort of basis. That's why we didn't have a chance to actually connect before you. Because it's live. You know, we just knew that this was going to happen. So we have Kathy Manser in the studio. We have Jessica Burtis in North Carolina. Jessica, are you a stargazer at all? I mean, I would have thought that the viewing is pretty good in North Carolina on a summer's evening.
Yeah, I have like an app to help me understand the constellations, and my dad does astrophotography, so he's had his photographs in a few like magazines before. He loves to get out his telescope and he'll take me outside and have me look at the constellation.
And Victoria, is this something where you think, of course I look at the stars, how do you think I get inspired for the music of the spheres, for the magical music I produce?
Well, yeah, we do have Touch the Stars after all. No, I'm really lucky. I've got a Velux in my bedroom, and I've got my telescope pointing straight out. And like Jessica, I got the app to work out which one's which. And I learned a lot, actually. I did a course online. Which is a bit sad.
No, it just shows your dedication to the cause, Victoria. I was fortunate enough to meet the late, great Sir Patrick Moore, actually, and did several shows with him over the years. And I suspect, I mean, even Thomas might be too young to remember Patrick Moore. Do you remember Sir Patrick Moore when he used to do the Scarlet Knight?
He was a big part of my childhood growing up, yeah.
Excellent. Of course, Chris has taken over from him and lots of other sort of folk. But tell us, by all means, what's happening on Sunday the 9th of July with the Starlink Planetarium, with an amazing tour of space and beyond as part of the New York Book Festival.
Yeah, so we'll be there at the Palace Theatre all day, 10 till 4, with our dome. You have to book in for a half-hour slot to come and see us with our amazing presenter, Lucy. She's been with us for a couple of years now, twice, and some of these topics. We usually do schools. We go around schools and present to primary school children the curriculum topic, all about space and all about the night sky. But so it's nice to be able to get out there and meet the public and do some public shows. So you can come down, you can learn a little bit about the solar system, the night sky, and we spend a bit of time touring the night sky within the planetarium.
A journey with words and images which transport you from the surface of the sun to the outer reaches of galaxies. Jessica, any questions you want to put to Thomas about Starlink's planetarium and more?
I would love to know what you would suggest for someone who's trying to just get into learning about space. I feel like, you know, I mean, it's expansive, so it's kind of hard to know where to start with stargazing and understanding it. So what would you suggest people begin with?
It can be expensive if you really get into it as a hobby, but it doesn't have to be an expensive place to start. A simple pair of binoculars, they don't have to be particularly fancy, but certainly, you know, perhaps £100 that you could spend on a pair of binoculars, or even slightly less, you'll be able to see an awful lot through those. And you can find loads of free resources on the internet, obviously, all about the different constellations and what to look for in the night sky. So you can quite quickly get started.
Victoria.
Oh, there you go. I'm unmuted. Now, how did you get involved or have a passion when it started? How did that start for you?
Great question. So it was actually my dad's business originally, and he's been running this. He ran this business for about 20 years, and it was really his hobby and his passion. He was really into the night sky and stars and understanding space travel and astronomy. And when he left the RAF, he was looking for something to do, a new career, and set up on his own to tour around schools, bringing that knowledge and that enthusiasm to the school. And he retired a couple of years ago. My wife and I took over the business at that point. So I sort of grew up on all of this, you know, on the theory and all of the passion for the night sky.
Kathy.
Yeah, I want to know... just to get people more involved, what from everything you've studied, from your passion, what you've learned, what do you think is one fact or, I guess, theory that you think would surprise a lot of people?
I think it's just the incredible distances involved and how big the space and the solar system is, even the solar system. We do a fab activity with classes young children where we talk about the size of the solar system, where you start with a football as the sun, and you imagine that the sun is actually the size of a football, and you start to talk about how big the solar system might be, and by the time you get to Pluto, you're literally miles away from the football, you know, on a relative scale. You'd have to get in a car and drive to represent just the size of our solar system. And then if you imagine that the size of the whole universe is so much larger than that, it really blows your mind just to think about scale on those terms.
Yesterday I was accessing 20 million miles to Earth, which, again, prepping for another forthcoming Resonance Rewind, based, of course, on the Ray Bradbury short story, in which, of course, we have a creature that's effectively emerged, been brought back, really, by American astronauts, inevitably, returning to Earth from the planet Venus. Now, clearly, from those days, 20 million miles is the closest that Venus could have actually been to the planet Earth, but actually, I think it was 26 million miles that there. We now, of course, know that Venus has got a fairly poisonous poisonous atmosphere, so there'll be challenges within that. Are you a lover of science fiction? And indeed, when you see something like 20 Million Miles to Earth, Great Models by Ray Harryhausen, would you say, I can't take it seriously because it's obviously not accurately based on a scientific sense? Or do you think actually that inspires in the same way as, dare I say it, shows like Star Trek have probably inspired people to look at the night skies?
I think you can love science fiction and love science. And, you know, some of these stories are developed in an age when science didn't have answers, and they're great ways to think about and theorize what might be true. And as you know, as you said, like, some of those things have turned out not to be true. But, you know, the best sort of scientists use stories and theories and ideas to develop, you know, the directions of their research. So I sometimes see science fiction as another way to do that, and another way to think about what might be out there.
A gateway to the cosmos. We'll talk Carl Sagan and more and other influential scenarios after a short musical break. And I take it, Thomas, you won't have any problem whatsoever with us featuring the awesome Victoria Simmons. Look, she's a next-door neighbour to you on Zoom at present. And Touch the Stars. Are you up for this?
Sounds good.
If you'd like to find out more about Victoria Simmons, well, tune in to next Sunday's Sound and Chloe's Vision, in which Victoria is a special guest on Sound and Chloe's Vision for June. Marvellous. What did you make of that little number, please, Thomas?
Yeah, fab, really good.
There we are, tap-toeing and wonderful stuff for the above you. Carl Sagan, is he somebody who is a massive influence on yourself, or is it a case of, well, he was an American and now he's dead?
Yeah, I mean, actually, interestingly, he wasn't really a big influence when I was growing up. And you mentioned Patrick Moore earlier.
Yes.
And that was definitely someone who was more, you know, Sunday night TV, you know, the Sky at Night and all of that was definitely kind of how we grew up.
See, that's interesting because, I mean, I'd go with that. But for me, Carl Sagan and Cosmos was one of those quintessential moments where the wonderment and the sheer awesomeness of the Cosmos was really brought out. Love Patrick Moore, and I had lots of good times with him. The thought you can pull in Sir Patrick Moore on past media matches and Midweek Drive shows. But I always felt he was... Yeah, possibly just a little bit too British and too eccentric. He spoke very quickly, and it was very difficult to actually understand sometimes what he was actually saying if you were sort of an sort of inhibited Patrick Moore sort of person. But, you know, that's a poor attempt there, obviously, I'm sure, Thomas, at the Patrick Moore enthusiasm that he actually had for his delivery. Victoria, do you remember Sir Patrick Moore? No. 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 YouTube, that's what I'd say.
Go to YouTube.
He was actually responsible for some of the maps which enabled humanity to set foot on the moon back in 1969. So that's Patrick Moore for you, as well as obviously his great friend Arthur C. Clarke, also no longer with us. But what about that inspiration? Because one aspect, Tom, that I think comes across from the perspective of Starling's planetarium is it designed to inspire the next generation of potential astronomers or indeed space travellers, given that we're probably looking at a time where space tourism could become a kind of standard way in which the ATM machines can charge us even more for journeys across the planet and to different planets.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, even in the 20 years that we've been doing this, things have changed a huge amount. Nowadays, the question's all about SpaceX and traveling to Mars. And, you know, the concepts of getting into space are really present in the moment. Back when this all started, it happened in the past. You know, the trips to the moon were so far in the past, people, they were memories more than the present. So the thinking has changed a lot, and there's a huge amount of interest now. And one of the things that we try to do is kind of inspire that interest in primary school children. We really try very hard to make the topic interesting. It's obviously fun to go and sit in a planetarium. It's something different to do with your day. It's not a classroom. So there's that element of it. But we also try and make it as informative as possible and really inspire people to think about what they could be doing in the future.
Yeah. Fun fact, which is quite a stirring fact for myself, I think, on the programme today. I'm the only person who actually will remember the last time humanity was actually on the moon back in 1972. But there you are. That's part of the whole story. Unless you are slightly more chronologically gifted than I'm thinking at this particular stage, Thomas.
No, and I one of the best things that I remember someone telling me about that was if you try and pick a more elite group of humans,
12 of them.
Struggle to do
12
so.
Of them.
Yes, there's only so few people that have ever done it out of the whole history of humanity. Yeah. And we're going to change that soon. It's going to change at some point. Someone else will stand on the moon. But that record has stood for a while.
Yeah, Apollo 11, 12, 14, 15, 16 and 17. Collectively, of course, all three astronauts, each one of them. But of course, one of the astronauts would stay in orbit around the moon whilst the lunar buggy, the lunar module, went down and landed. Anyway, life continues. So, Kathy, any other questions you'd like to put to our key astronomer and indeed Starlink? So I know you've been having a look at the descriptor on the New York Book Festival's fabulous brochure, Sunday the 9th of July. Anything you'd like to throw in at the mix?
Yeah, so my question kind of deals more with how do you combat, you know, there's a lot of discussion that I was kind of surprised when I used to be an educator, where the myth of the moon landing being fake. And I thought it was more of a joke than people honestly believing in it. But I've come to find that those numbers are getting larger and larger. So how do you combat these people that are saying that we didn't hit these huge moments in history and that it was planned?
That's a really great question. I mean, it does come up as a topic in questions and conversation. Got to remember these are primary school children as well. So you know, they
but they might say my daddy says it never happened, it was Capricorn 1, it was all exactly. Set in the Nevada desert. How can you answer that?
And you can't tell them all. You can't tell them all the science that proves it, because it's, you know, it's a little bit beyond them. Things like they left laser reflectors on the moon. So, you know, a home science experiment that you can do with relatively inexpensive kit, if you really put it together, and some very careful planning, you can fire a laser and bounce it back off the moon, because the laser reflectors that they left. So there's all sorts of different evidence that we can use. But it is really hard. And you're right, things like this have cropped up more and more often. Conspiracy theories are obviously very popular at the minute. So all we can do is just keep educating, keep telling people the science and the facts, and make it really interesting and as plausible as we can.
Arguably, from the first time we started emerging from the oceans and becoming a society, we'd actually look up and create those stories in the stars that would obviously be defined as the Greek mythologies, the gods, and so on and so forth. So narration comes across from that perspective. Do you have a particular favourite constellation or aspect? I mean, I always quite like the Pleiades, actually. I don't know why, but I always thought the Pleiades were quite nice. Is there a favourite constellation or indeed signifier in the cosmos that, for yourself, Thomas, you think, I always like to check out the Great Bear, or equivalent?
I always quite like Cassiopeia, which is perhaps a little bit of a boring choice, because it's a little W in the sky. But when I was younger and struggled to sort of see the shapes and patterns, that was one of the few I could really pick out. And to this day, like, I can almost get straight to it. If I look up at the sky, I can see it straight away, and it really pops out at me.
And the belt of Orion, of course, and other areas, which is all good. Jessica, any questions for yourself?
I have to say, like, what are some of your favorite programs on science to kind of learn from home? Do you have some shows that you like to watch, or documentaries that you really recommend to people?
Oh, there's so much available nowadays. And I really like maybe just going on YouTube and places like that nowadays. And there's some really great content creators. You can just pop some search terms in the bar. Search bar, looking for astronomy topics, or there's plenty about rocketry and space travel. There's some really great channels all about that that explain some of the science behind it. The science of rockets and how rockets fly is incredible. If you like space and you like a bit of physics, it's a great topic to lose a load of time on.
Victoria, any from yourself in France for our link, Newarkshire based Seoul, of course. Currently at the other end of the line.
No, I think it's all a brilliant thing, but do you feel that lots of people from your talks and going around in the education system, whether lots of people are taking this on maybe as a hobby when they get home? Or...
We tend to find that there is a lot of interest, and what we'll often find is, I think we do inspire interest, but we'll often find people that already have that interest, which is always great fun. When you've got someone sat right at the front of a class answering all the questions, and sometimes even being able to kind of like tell you more than you know.
186,000 miles per second. Sorry, speed of light.
Absolutely. Yeah, they know all of the details, but that's great. Like, some people might find that frustrating when someone has all the answers, but it's fab to see how much enthusiasm modern children, you know, have for some of these topics.
Are we in good shape then for the 21st century as the folk that you'll be inspiring at those events, such as, of course, Sunday the 9th of July, the Starlinks Planetarium, limited capacity per showing, of course, so make sure you book early to avoid disappointment. Do you feel as though actually things are going to be okay for the future generations of the planet Earth?
Yes, I think so. We'll, you know, maybe we've taught some of the future astronauts and some of those people that will again walk on the moon. Who knows? It'd be really exciting to find out.
Would you be tempted to go up and do a William Shatner and actually to take one of those rocket ships across the threshold of the atmosphere, Thomas?
I think I would. Yeah, like my dad and I talk about this all the time, and I think we definitely would. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of flying, but I think you've got to take these opportunities. I found it really interesting, actually. William Shatner said he hated the experience, if I remember rightly. He found it really...
He was emotionally overwhelmed. He burst into tears when he came back down to the planet Earth. And I think he thought everybody should go through that, which is fine, I suppose. We all have our ways forward. But, I mean, I say for a nonagenarian, as he was, I think he just turned 90 when he did the thing. So it shows that there's positivity across the globe, really. Kathy, anything from yourself?
I guess the big question that I have for you, do you think humans will be living out in space in generations past?
It's called planet Earth.
That's a great question, and I think we're going to have to at some point in the future, you know, and there's no reason that we can't. The technology is already feasible in some respects. It's just about the cost and somebody willing to do it and there being a reason to do it. So I believe that certainly in my lifetime, we will have some kind of colony on the moon and be mining the moon for resources, certainly.
Well, at least we've passed 1999, so it's not going to be blown out of its orbit in a sort of Gerry Anderson mode, but that's another thing entirely. Maybe we'll go down the line of Elon Musk's journey to Mars. Had much more faith in Elon before he took over the social media firm, though.
Sure. So,
could be said about
he's his
things.
Own worst enemy.
Well, never mind. Meanwhile, how can people actually follow the Starlink's planetarium, Thomas, online? Which social media can people access your details on?
Yeah, we've got a website, starlinks.co.uk, and we are on Twitter as @StarmanMick. So feel free to give us a follow.
@StarmanMick, did you say there?
Yeah, that's why it's my dad's Twitter handle.
Of course. I was just thinking, that's very good. Named after, of course, the David Bowie classic of the same name, which we're not going to play now, but we will go out with the bell, stars and sign of the times after two final questions for your good self, Thomas. Firstly, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the Midweek Drive Live today?
Yeah, it's been great fun. Thanks for having me on.
Excellent. So can we prevail upon you to join us again? Will you come back sometime, probably post-festival, and keep us appraised of matters to do with the Starlink's planetarium?
Absolutely, yeah. Happy to come back anytime.
As I lie here, thinking of you, I realise that nothing is new.
Lying in my bed, thinking of
approach the second hour of Midweek Drive Live. We'll be hopefully accessing, or at least accessing, sounds dreadful. We'll be speaking to Grace, as I say, our young author, assuming she connects in all sorts of ways, which is always wonderful. Kathy, any thoughts or questions you'd like to put to Jessica, who's patiently waiting in the joys of North Carolina?
Yes, Jessica, now that you've returned to North Carolina, what are the activities you've been waiting to do that you can finally do? Oh no.
Eating Mexican food. That was the very
yes.
first thing. I missed it so bad.
I completely understand. We don't talk about this enough.
I don't know what's going on. There's like a desert for Mexican food happening over in Europe, and it needs to change.
It's kind of rude.
It was painful. Yeah, it's wrong.
I mean, in the world of globalization, it's just, I don't know how we're here.
I have no idea.
I must admit, I never thought we'd actually sort of have two Americans talking about the dearth of Mexican food in either Dublin or indeed Great Britain. It's astounding. It's the sort of thing which could inspire somebody to actually write a book, which might be the next sequel to Dogtopia, because Dogtopia, How I Became a Child Author and You Can Too, is the event that's taking place on Saturday the 8th of July at the New York Book Festival. And we're delighted to welcome the author of Dogtopia to the programme now. That's 9-year-old Grace. How are you, Grace?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
We're fine. And I have to say, the only 9-year-old I used to encounter was Joe 90, a fabulous sort of chap who actually did it all through a pair of special glasses back in the day. Look it up at YouTube or ask your mum, Grace. But let's talk a little bit about Dogtopia. First and foremost, why did you decide to write this book?
Well, on my grandpa's birthday, so I'm from Australia, but our grandmom's grandparents live here in England, and we come to visit them every year, except for the COVID years, obviously, because we couldn't fly then. But I had this like notebook thing, and I wrote down a story in there, and like a rough copy of this book because I was kind of bored. And then I asked Mum if she knew anybody who I could get to publish it, because I really liked the story. And then it just happened that it was the New York Book Festival around the time, and they had a publishing like call to because they were experimenting with a new website, and it was they showed me how to use all the software and how to like do the drawings in the book, and they showed me how to use everything, and then
and the world has never been the same since, which is wonderful. Now, Dogtopia, inspired, I gather, by Sugar, your ball of furry love, who actually flew your good self to Suggy Bugland, is that right, Grace?
Because her name is Sugar, we call her Shuggy
Bigland. Right, Shuggy Bigland, exactly.
Yeah, get it right, Alex.
Yeah.
Come on, you got to respect the dog in this country.
That is very true. It's very. Kathy, any questions for Grace?
100, but I'll stick to the one. Grace, I wanted to know, has this inspired you for a career in being an author?
It would be pretty awesome to be an author, because then I could, like, my job would be, I get to sit in bed and eat biscuits and pizza and type stuff on my computer.
Yeah, that's the dream. I think I completely agree with you in this. This would be excellent, and I only wish this for you.
Jessica, you have just been in the process of doing a year postgraduate work at Dublin Trinity College, of course, where you've been looking at children's literature. Here we have a child author in person. I'm sure you've got lots of questions from North Carolina for Grace.
Ah, of course I do. Hi, Grace.
Hi.
I was so curious about, were you imagining a specific person reading this? Did you write this for your grandparents, or did you just want everyone to be able to read this?
Well, I guess I wanted everyone to read it, but I probably read it for my dogs, because I like reading books and I like dogs, so I read with my dogs. So I wrote it to read with my dogs.
Does Sugar like it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have a short excerpt at all, Grace, that you could probably share with us? I mean, I'm just wondering if you have the book to one side, it'd be really nice to have a short little excerpt from it. If you have something that you could read out, or just from the opening introduction that you'd like to share with the listener.
Oh, I don't actually have the book with me right here
right now.
That's
okay. That's fine. That's
you're going to just have to wait for the Newark Book Festival.
Clearly, this is the key thing.
This is a marketing tactic.
So you're being interviewed by, of course, one of the fabulous Rideout family. That's Keziah, who is going to be interviewing you. Have you been prepped for the day itself? Because you're there in the library meeting room for a whole hour. That's 3,600 seconds, Grace. 10:30 a.m. to 11:30.
Yeah, I think I am prepped.
Good.
I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, yeah.
I wasn't a month away.
I'm sure you'd be wonderful from that aspect. And why dogs as opposed to cats?
Well, cats aren't as associative. Dogs are all cuddly, but cats would probably prefer to do their own thing. And also, I don't have any cats, so I have two dogs instead.
I suppose that makes sense.
She writes from experience.
This is true. Dogtopia as opposed to feline-topia.
Exactly.
Cat-topia. Very good. Kathy, back to yourself.
Yes, I do have another question. This is more to do with your dog, Sugar. Now, obviously, I feel like you're going to say the answer is your book, which I think is fair. But I was curious, what is Sugar's favorite book from all the books that you've read with your dogs?
I think her favorite book would be like Dog Training, because there's so many like pictures of treats in there.
That's fair. That's fair. I think that's accurate to say. It's kind of like when you leave the TV on and they see other dogs running around. You're like, hey, I want to make friends.
Music, Grace, makes the world go round. Do you have any particular dog-themed tunes that you like to listen to? Obviously, there's Who Let the Dogs Out. That's a go-to.
A classic.
Thing. We've frequently sort of said that technically we could look at Hound Dog, of course. Two Hounds, Bill Haley. But, I mean, are there any other musical stars that you listen to? Or what do you do when you're not writing, basically, Grace?
And I participate in, like, artist activities like swim.
We got part of you there. You were dropping out slightly.
I think she said acting.
Acting, right? That's okay. So, I mean, where? What's the Grace grand plan? Where can we actually see? I mean, for those people who are going to be fortunate enough to connect with your good self for this Dogtopia event, what sort of things would you like to inspire your fellow 9-year-olds and beyond to actually do with life?
Well, I'd want to them to inspire them to, like, write their own stories or do something very creative, or maybe, like, enter, like, a picture into an art competition or, like, something that they did themselves.
Yep, I think that's a way forward. And whereabouts in Australia are you based? I mean, you said you'd flown over from Australia. So where's the Australian location? Because it's a big country.
Well, I live in Sandringham, Melbourne, Victoria, Australia. But I fly into Nottinghamshire.
Mm-hmm.
I don't fly into Nottinghamshire, but I drive to Nottinghamshire from the airport because that's where my granny lives. And I'm assuming Dogtopia is like somewhere in the middle of the Indian Ocean.
Nice. Very good. Nicely put together on that sort of basis. Grace, have you ever heard Who Let the Dogs Out by the Baha Men?
Yes.
Ah.
Like I said, a classic.
It is a classic, but I never know 9-year-olds these
check.
Days.
That's fair.
They may not even catch the whole thing, Gabby.
Are we generalizing 9-year-olds right now, Alex?
Clearly, I am obviously sort of working on that premise. So, Grace, would you mind if we actually played that and then came back to you after we've heard the Baha Man?
I wouldn't mind at all.
For $1 billion, the question is, who let the dogs out?
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 Well, the party was nice, the party was bumping.
Hey, yeah.
And everybody having a ball.
Hey,
until the fellas started in calling. And the girls respond to the call. I have a bullwhip shout out.
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
I see the young people had a balcony. Billy Pongers, get out. Get back, Gruffy. Bash, Gruffy. Get back, you flea infested mongrel. Gonna tell myself I'm man, no get angry.
Hey, yeah.
Two Eddie cows calling them canine. Hey,
B-I-O.
But they tell me, hey man, it's part of the party.
B-I-O.
You put a woman in front and a man behind. I heard a woman shout out,
who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
Say, my doggy is nothing if he don't have a bone.
Oh, doggy, hold your bone. Oh, doggy, hold it.
My doggy is nothing if he don't have a bone.
Oh, doggy, hold your bone.
Billy Pongers, get out. Get back, Gruffy. Bash, Gruffy. Get back, you flea infested mongrel.
Well, if I am a dog, the party is on. I gotta get my groove on, my mind, I'm gone. Do you see the rays coming from my eye? Walking through the prison, Digimon is breaking them down. Me and my white socks, short, dealing, gancy color. Any caliber, do I think I knew, that's why they call me Pitbull. Cause I'm the man of the land, with it to me, that's it.
Who let the dogs out? 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 Who let the dogs out?
That's probably Donald Trump. Anyway, Kathy, you've got lots of questions for Grace. I think we've identified that she must be in Nottinghamshire at present, as opposed to in Australia, because we've seen light coming through the window. Unless she gets up at 3 a.m.
I've used my detective skills, and obviously there seems to be some sun shining.
Good.
Yes. So, just to confirm, are you in Nottingham right now?
Well, I was yesterday, except me and Mum went on like a girls' trip to a hotel so we could see Annie the musical tonight.
Oh, that's amazing. Have you seen Annie the film before you see the musical?
Yeah, except I can't remember what happened because it was like 2 years ago.
That's fair. It's been a while. Well, that just means you're getting to watch something completely new. Have you been to musicals before, I guess is my next question.
At school, we do a musical every second year and the whole junior school is involved. But then also, just before I came over here to England to visit Granny, we went to see my secondary school's production of Strictly Ballroom. And I've also went to see, I think I've went to see something else, but I can't remember. Oh yeah, I went to see Mary Poppins.
Oh, good classics, good ones. So far, what's your favorite? What's been your favorite musical?
Maybe Mary Poppins, because it was like really cool how they had all the stage effects and there was really good singing and dancing. And I like how in the scene, in the basket, they just carried this dog around and it was just a toy dog. But they put on really loud sound effects of the dog going, woof, woof, woof.
See, you know, dogs just bring happiness. My last question to you about the musical is, if you could play a character in Mary Poppins, which character would you play?
I would either play the dog or I would play the little girl.
Ooh, actually, I'm taking all the time, guys. I have obviously serious questions here, but I want to ask, because this is kind of a cliche with dog owners, is that the people who have dogs kind of mimic the personality, or the dog mimics the personality of the owner. And do you think that's the case with your dog?
Well, they don't mimic my behavior exactly. My sugar dog, she has a personality that is very different. She suffers from something called FOMO, which is fear of missing out. Whatever my other dog, Honey, does, she must do at the exact same time. She must do it at the same time as her, and she must do it in the same place as her. And if Honey is having, like, a hug, she must budge Honey out of the way and get on top of whoever the hugger is.
Wow, they really are siblings.
Mm. Fascinating. Jessica, any thoughts from your good soul? I mean, clearly, if a dog's called Sugar, you might be getting into sweet tea, but maybe not.
I was actually wondering, would you want Dogtopia to be made into a play?
Definitely.
Do you think you and your friends could put together a production? That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, except I'm not sure how it would work, though. Because it's not like a story, it's more like an A to Z. So it'd have to have, like, a scene happening on every alphabet letter.
Did you have a hard time kind of coming up with words for each thing, or how did you go about coming up with your ideas?
Well, I think on number N, or like letter N, I found it very hard, and then my cousin, she gave me some help with that one, and so I did nuts, Nutella.
Excellent
choice.
Well, proving that the expanding world of dogs can actually grow even to North America beyond yourself, Kathy, and, of course, Jessica. We have our ace film director, Phil Leonis, joining now. I mean, Phil, I'm just about to ask Grace, 9-year-old Grace, author of her first book, Dogtopia, How I Became a Child Author, and You Can Too, whether you prefer Grace to go for supercalifragilisticexpialidocious or Tomorrow from Annie. In fact, we'll take that before we get to Phil Leonis in force. Which one would you prefer, Grace? Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious from, of course, Mary Poppins, or indeed Tomorrow with the musical Annie. Where are you going to go, Grace? This could be significant to your entire writing career. No pressure.
Well, I already have listened to the Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious one for ages, and I'm seeing Annie tonight, so maybe Tomorrow.
Your bottom dollar that tomorrow there'll be sun. Just thinking about tomorrow clears away the cobwebs and the sorrow till there's none. When I'm stuck with a day that's gray and lonely, I just stick out my chin.
Back in the pre-pandemic days, yours truly, Phil Leonis, was a regular 6:30 p.m. co-host on the midweek drive with Alex Lefchuk and his team in Lincoln, England, in addition to my weekly duties co-hosting your Chilpack Hollywood Hour. Will I be back on the midweek drive soon? Let's find out.
Yes, he's back now. Phil Leonis, you've obviously been singing along with Annie. And what's not to sing along to when you've got Annie in the background there? Tomorrow, joyous. But you've obviously, now we can introduce you to Grace, 9-year-old Grace from Australia. in at the Newark Book Festival talking about Dogtopia, how I became a child author, not me, Grace, and you can too. Phil, over to you.
You know, is this the part where you find out what I predicted Grace would select musically? Because I had written down Tomorrow. And thank you, by the way. I know this is mostly audio only, though, for your participants flung far and wide as we are. We get to interact verbally. That's part of audio.
That's
right. I'm American. But visually, we get to interact as well. And Kathy's jazz hands during that song. Wow. Ooh,
very impressive.
Thank you.
All of us, the 9-year-old in all of us, have something to learn from Kathy Manso, may I say. Grace, what's harder, writing a book, being from down under, being at something called the Newark Book Festival? What's harder, and are you the only hope we have to beat the AI that wants to take over all writing chores from all of us?
Second question, probably no, unless I eat something or I get drunk and then I turn into some psycho robot thing.
You can't get drunk? I mean, you can, but you can't.
It's a different line for Australians, obviously.
Wow.
It's crazy down under.
We just suddenly were lost. Was she embracing, was this 9-year-old wunderkind embracing the stereotype lifestyle of an author by talking about getting drunk, or the stereotype lifestyle of an Australian? We don't know.
So the first question, I forgot what it was.
Oh, what's hard? What's hard being you? Is it harder writing a book? Is it harder being from Australia? Is it harder being at the Newark Book Festival? What's hard for you?
I think it's harder writing a book because it took like 6 months just to draw the illustrations, let alone having to wait for all the shipping and then having to go into the bookstores and then giving them all my books to sell.
It's a tough world out there, Phil. You don't realize, you know, for a 9-year-old to actually deal with the shipping as well. Unbelievable.
Oh, my goodness. That doesn't get easier the older we get.
Jessica, anything you'd like to add before we actually throw those last two questions to Grace?
Well, I would like to know what some of your favorite books growing up have been.
I have a lot of favorite books. Bunny versus Monkey. Pretty much anything by Jemmy Smart. David Walliams books. Dogman. What other thing? Oh, Horrible Histories. What other things? Books
yeah, Bunny have? Versus Monkey, I believe, could almost be summing up the Ukraine situation versus the Russians, really.
I mean, yeah, it really does. It has a lot of layers.
Thank you for that. Awesome. Kathy, anything you'd like to close with?
Oh, to close with? We're going to already...
We've been working very hard, and she's got to go and see Annie, the musical.
I understand. I can't take more of her time. She's been excellent so far. I guess, what is something you want people to know about your book? What's something that you think is important for them to know before they go and buy it? Because inevitably, they will.
Okay, if you are scared of your allergy to nuts, then do not read the book. If you are afraid of nuts coming out of Nutella and destroying you or your city, do not read the book. If you're afraid of psycho oranges, do not read the book. If you are afraid of puppies, very cute puppies, do not read the book. But if you like animals, read the book. And if you are a slight bit evil, read the book.
I have a question.
Go for it.
I have a question. Because I loved that Ms. Burtis just asked a 9-year-old, what were you reading when you were growing up? So to dovetail on that question, what would your advice be to young authors?
Well, my advice is, even though it's super hard to self-publish a book and you have to use your mom's computer because your mom won't let you have a computer, you keep on going, because in the end it's really worth it to then get to read your book yourself and to whoever you wrote the book to. And also you get to see how far you've come with writing your book.
Now, I'm looking, Grace, at the wonderful images to the Ultimate A to Z Guide, for Americans, A to Z Guide, to Dogtopia, by Grace Jackson. And we have the descriptor: the author started writing this book when she was 8 and published it when she was 9. It was inspired, as we know, by Sugar, your ball of furry love, who flew her to Shuggy Bugland, Dogtopia, and showed her all of its wonderful secrets one holiday when she was missing her. This is a full-colour, beautifully illustrated guide to another multiverse for children. So we've got the multiverse already in place from that point of view, aged from early childhood to late primary, and dog lovers of all ages. This book is a testament that any child can be an author and illustrator at any age if they just have the courage to follow their dreams. Welling up already with respect to that. It just shows.
I don't know, Grace. Are you going to be in the Olympics? Are you going to space? What's the next plan here?
My next plan is to take my dogs and fly into space, but that's not going to happen. Unless my dogs become like some thieves and hack into the NASA computers and steal a space rocket.
Well, never say never.
And I mean, we've got to just introduce you to this, Grace, and I appreciate you're more of a dog person than a feline person, but Phil Linus, you have a furry friend who adopted your course called Fuzz Aldrin, talking about space rockets, etc. I mean, I just feel that there must be some sense in which we could have the multiverse expanding with Sugar, Grace's dog, of course, encountering Fuzz Aldrin. Phil, I bowl it out to your good self, so to maybe inspire Grace for this line.
Fuzz Aldrin flew yesterday from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., to Los Angeles, and she peeped up once, made a little meow to let us know her displeasure when she got into the cab on the way to the airport. Then that was it. No struggle for her. She was she loves it. She enjoys traveling. I wish some of the young people in the row in front of me were as well-behaved as Fuzz Aldrin during a cross-country flight. So animals, you know, there's a long history of animals in space, as we know, right? Weren't the first, the first astronauts, for both countries, I think, weren't they? Both countries, because there's two countries. I'm exhausted. I make no sense whatsoever.
Laika, I think, was the first canine to actually go up into space for the Soviet Union. America sent up monkeys.
But did they ever come back?
Yes, of course they did. Yeah. I think they did. I think you'll find. I think they did.
I don't know. We're going to have to fact check that.
it's true.
You mean they're still orbiting?
Yeah, it's a whole lot. Grace, have you had a reasonably interesting debut Zoomer on the Midweek Drive Live? Has it been okay for you?
Yeah.
Nice.
Thank you.
Positive. Can we look forward to connecting with you again and keeping us appraised of your life post New York Book Festival? Will you come back sometime and keep us connected via Zoom?
Definitely.
Splendid. A round of applause for Grace Jackson, please. Yay. And you can see Grace Jackson in person being interviewed by Kasaya. Ride Out, that's Dogtopia, How I Became a Child Author. And you can too. It's 10:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. in the library meeting room, obviously in Newark. Pay what you can on the day. So I would anticipate several million pounds at least. For the whole thing from that point of view. But that's all very important. Enjoy Annie, Grace. Keep on keeping on. And keep on writing.
Thank you.
presumably you can if you attend the school's program event as part of the Newark Book Festival, which of course Thomas Taylor will be just one of a fine group of souls who'll be involved with that. So we were speaking to Grace Jackson, of course, the wonderful soul. Thomas, welcome to the program. How are you, sir?
Hello, I'm fine, thank you. It's good to be on.
And we do like the book background. We were just saying Kathy Manser is in the studio. It's always nice. People take their radio seriously, so you actually have a background of books behind you, which it shows that quality is there and maintained throughout. Okay, let's jump straight to Jessica, I think. Any questions you'd like to put to Thomas Taylor, who, as I say, a little bit more mature than Grace Jackson, maybe too much, et cetera. Actually, Thomas, stay with us. What will he be doing as part of this school's program event at Lincoln, because I know Sarah Bullimore is always keen to actually ensure that you get that wonderful synergy between the writers of tomorrow, the writers of today, and of course the writers of now, of yesterday.
Yes, well, I've been invited onto a panel event called the Battle of the Genre, and I have to defend children's books against a writer of romance, a crime writer, and a historian. So I'm going to be doing my best to keep them at bay and put forward the idea that children's books are very important.
No, it's fair to say. Yep. Sorry, I was just going to say very briefly, interjecting that we've already spoken to Sharon Bennett Connolly, Fellow of the Royal Historical Society. She was very passionate last week in saying that it's all about not historical fiction, but historical fact. In fact, we were working on putting it together in terms of that whole basis. Tim Rideout is chairing the panel. You, of course, Thomas, are no slouch in this field because you have produced the incredibly popular Erie on Sea series of mystery books for younger readers. But we have three Americans with us. Kathy in the studio from Miami, Jessica Burtis online from North Carolina, and currently back in Los Angeles, I think. Or is he? Are you in Washington, Phil? I haven't quite... You are back in Los Angeles, Phil Leonis, director extraordinaire. So, would you like to explain for those fine souls what Erie on Sea is all about?
So Erie on Sea is a series of children's books set in a strange, magical little seaside town out of season. So normally a seaside story would probably be in the summer. There'd be sandcastles, there'd be ice cream. But this is very much in the winter when the terrible weather closes in and sea mist creeps up the beach. I think that's the best time to go to the beach, because that's a great time to go beachcombing and a great backdrop for mystery stories. So these are mystery stories about a character called Herbert Lemon and his partner, Violet Palmer, who have to solve a series of rather paranormal and mysterious happenings in this seaside town.
So Herbert and Violet are in a Erie on a Sea series, not to be confused, of course, for those of us of a certain age, with Erie, Indiana.
No, indeed not.
That's okay. I just wanted to clarify that because it's important. Jessica, over to you.
I think this sounds absolutely wonderful. I genuinely want to know where this idea came from. Is it because you like going to the beach in the winter and you were kind of wondering, like, oh, what would happen? Who would solve some mysteries here?
Yeah, that's kind of it. So I moved to the seaside about 10 years ago and began to be here all year round. So like many people, I was used to going to the ocean in the summer, you know, but not going in the winter. But being there all year round, you get to see the kinds of things that go on out of season when the tourists aren't there, kind of people who are still around, what stories they've got. That tends to be when you hear about the local legends, and maybe the local legends, which would have been a bit funny to hear in the summer, suddenly sound a little bit more sinister when the weather is a bit creepy and it's getting dark. So it's that, really, that, and also beachcombing and finding things, really weird and wonderful things on the beach, including dinosaur bones. You can imagine how finding an actual dinosaur bone on the beach would inspire somebody to create a sea monster, which is what happened.
And I would love to know what character names are one of the things I most enjoy. So Herbert Lemon and Violet Palmer are such distinct names. How did you come up with those?
Well, in fact, this is something that I do have to explain to people in America quite a lot, because they're actually based on sweets, on a kind of candy, quite traditional candy. So we have sherbet lemons, or lemon sherbets, and I've taken away a letter to have Herbert Lemon, Herbie's his friends. And then we have these very, very old-fashioned sort of purple sugary pastel sweets called Palmer Violets. And I flipped the words around to get Violet Palmer. So in fact, their names are very evocative. I think British people get it quite readily. I don't think in North America these two things are very well known. So I'm glad to explain.
But it's very cute.
Yeah. We need some Hershey's chocolate bars in there.
Yes.
Open up that correlation. Or maybe Jessica can help you with, of course, her mantra and indeed the Jessica Berta's mission to spread sweet tea and boiled peanuts around the world. Jessica, I'll throw to you to give this question, because it is something I think, as an author, perhaps Thomas may never have even encountered this question before, ever.
No, I mean, peanut boil could work as a funny name. I think that sounds like a good children's book name. But yeah, we like to ask people, have you ever tried sweet tea or boiled peanuts? They're favorite where I'm from.
A sweet tea, I think so. Boiled peanuts, that's not something, for me, a peanut is a thing that's roasted or raw, I guess. But no, boiled, how does that work out? What happens? Do they go very soft?
So yes, you boil them, green peanuts still in the shell, and you boil them with a bunch of salt, and it's a really good snack to have if you want a very salty treat. And they're eaten, they're kind of like a very soft consistency, and you take them out of the shell and they are amazing. They're fantastic. You should definitely try them if you get the chance.
I'll look out for them.
It is pretty awesome. Battle of the genres, Phil Linus. Battle of the genres. We've already identified historical fact with Sharon Bennett Colony. We've got the awesome children, younger readers, mystery books for younger readers, Thomas Taylor, with us at present. We've also got the winner of the Theakston Crime Novel of the Year Award, that's Sarah Hillary. And indeed, Mike Gale, Sunday Times best-selling author and winner of the Outstanding Achievement Award from the Romantic Novelists Association. I suggested, could this be a kind of jello wrestling lockdown scenario? I was given short shrift by Tim Rideout. I don't know why. But Phil, any questions you'd like to put?
Any questions?
Yes.
Any questions? Do you see my notes from what was just said?
Exactly.
You know, I am American, and I appreciated that in the opening you said you talked about his wonderful books, and then you said, but we have three Americans. What an interesting
kind of rude.
Because we don't read, because if you read, then you get book learning, and we choose to believe in alternative facts and whether something feels true. So anyway, that said, here, if we had a battle of the genres, I think it's safe to say in America that battle would be fought with guns. All right, now let's talk about but I do love children's literature as a genre right after we've just had a children's literature author who is a child. I mean, that blows one's mind altogether. Thank you for explaining the sweets, the names coming from the sweets. Americans can understand that. That's called product placement. So we hope you're getting some good kickback from those companies. I also, by the way, Jessica, saying we like to ask this question, I don't think we means what you think it means, unless you're referring to yourself as the royal we.
No,
I don't think
no,
any of us.
Alex, and it's me. A thing they do. Phil, if you come on the show more often,
we made it sound like I was thrown under this bizarre.
Well, now you are. You are now. You're
all
part
right,
of
good.
This now.
All right,
Phil,
pick
the food
it.
And drink
okay.
that you think everyone should be trying.
But now let's seriously delve into how fantastic these books sound. Of course, Strange Little Seaside Town. For Americans, every English seaside town is strange. So that doesn't narrow it down at all. But this idea of placing a mystery there, I think the equivalent in America might be like an abandoned amusement park, might be something that evokes that tone. But I love this locale where there's this exploration of mystery, because these locales to me really speak to the fact that you might solve the plot of what's going on, but the mystery of these places still remain. That a mystery is something that almost to a degree is insoluble, and we just discover something about ourselves through its exploration. Like the works of Ray Bradbury, when he actually went quite literally into some mysteries towards the end of his writing career. But I love this particular kind of genre where even the resolution doesn't in any way diminish the magic, for lack of a better word, the mystery. I would say there was an explanation Alex was kind enough to give about Erie not being Erie, Indiana, but he neglected to ever tell me that there was a Newark in England, because I naturally have been looking through all the events in Newark, New Jersey, trying to find this book festival.
It's a problem we've often tried to address. And
like how Lincoln gets confused with Lincoln, Nebraska, so Newark easy. Gets confused with Newark, New Jersey.
Always. People go along to the Newark Book Festival and say, where's Bruce Springsteen? He doesn't turn up.
Never. Oh, it's heartbreaking.
But they do.
Because here, when we think of Lincoln, Nebraska, right, we always automatically say, oh, yes, I've flown over it.
Yes.
And Thomas Taylor will be at Newark, Nottinghamshire, as opposed to New York, Newark.
Sure.
Yes, unless I haven't been given the right ticket.
You never know, Thomas. So let's talk about inspirations. Who has inspired you as a writer? And are you quietly confident that your genre will actually wipe the floor with your competitors?
Well, I guess I'm kind of hoping it'll all be quite genial on the day and that the historian is going to bring a trebuchet and start launching flaming buckets of oil at me. But no, I think it'll be fine. I will do my best. After all, where do adult readers come from? They come from children. Children have to start reading somewhere, and I'm the one who provides the books for the readers who go on to read their books. So I think I've won already, but I'll be polite. I'll play along, and I'm sure it'll be a lot of fun. And as for who inspired me as a writer, I mean, that's very hard to say. There's so many writers I admire. From first discovering Tolkien when I was young, reading Terry Pratchett, and sort of zooming off into the world of, I suppose, weird fiction, ghost stories, M.R. James, all that. I mean, just kind of, it's a whole ocean out there. It's very hard to pick one drop and just zoom in on that. But
well, if speaking of genre, if someone were to say, an adult were to say, not a child, if an adult were wanting to delve into the greats of children literature, where would you say they should start?
It depends if you mean the classics or if you mean what's great now, I suppose. So it's very easy when an adult who doesn't really have much contact with children's literature decides to go and read Lewis Carroll. That's fine, obviously, but obviously Lewis Carroll's been around a while. There's been such an amazing kind of tidal wave of really great fiction written for children in the last 5 or 10 years, or slightly longer. So I would go to a librarian, if you can find one, and ask them what's great. You know, ask them what's new and what's really exciting, and you'll get masses of choice. There's an American book I really like, came out a couple of years ago, called Oddity by Eli Brown. Absolutely brilliant. It's a kind of alternative Wild West, except it's more in the Napoleonic age, but it's kind of, imagine the Wild West with magical items. It's just a brilliant book, and I tell everybody about it when I meet them, because it's really great. And that's a kid's book, and that might be overlooked, but anyone could read that. It's absolutely, it's like Philip Pullman. Is Philip Pullman really a children's book writer? Lots of children love his books, but everyone loves his books. So I think good writing, good storytelling is really for everybody, and sometimes these labels do frustrate me a little bit.
Are there any through lines that you can say about books that do, not only in the moment, please, because I know adults that will go back and back again and again to certain children's literature and get more and more out of it. Is there a through line to you of what these books contain that they can continue to speak to readers of all ages without speaking down to any of them?
I think when you're an adult looking back on what switched you on as a reader when you were a child, that book that opened up your mind to what writing can be, to what a book can be, that book will stick with you. And so it's no surprise to me that adults go back, often perhaps as comfort reads, but they go back to the book that meant a lot to them when they were 12, when they were 14. And so I think it's just really great writing that touches something true, that really gets through to the reader. It's kind of like a magic. You don't really know what it is when you set out to write a book, but you kind of feel your way towards it and try and find it and try and always to get it on the page, hoping that it will connect to readers. But it's true. You see, adults get very nostalgic, don't they? And so that nostalgia, if you can sort of prick that nostalgia early on, and they come back to your book, that's quite a remarkable thing.
Consistently reading the Tale of the Little Prince by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry and seeing many more layers in it. Likewise, Jonathan Livingston Seagull, Richard Bach, of course. It's been terrific connecting with your good self so far, Thomas. I think there's a whole range of aspects within that. Battle of the Genres, of course, taking place in Newark Town Hall on Sunday the 9th of July. That's between 1 and 2 p.m. Remember, of course, it's Newark, Nottinghamshire, England. A mere £7 will actually get you entry into this fantastic thing. £4 if you're a festival friend. friend, and well worth actually going to work through that. Thomas, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on this, your debut Midweek Drive Live?
I have. It's been great. Yeah. It's
excellent.
Been
well, you're more than welcome to stick
around.
I found
out about peanuts as well, soft-boiled peanuts.
We always like to educate. It is very important. It's why Siren Radio is part of the University of Lincoln. You know, we like to connect on that basis. You know, it's a radio station within the university, connects on that side of things. Scholars and radio entertainment. So can we prevail upon you to join us again in the near future? Will you be coming back?
Me? Yes, I'd love to.
Excellent. You can still stick around if you wish, or indeed tune online, because we've got Jessica's summation of the show, plus, of course, Phil Dearness's general witty words of wisdom and general wonderment. In many ways, we can go back to Phil Dearness coming up with the summation of the show long before Robin Pearce actually started. It was a way forward. To take us around to that, of course, Elvis Costello. Never know quite what Kathy is going to do with respect to her life and times, or indeed Jessica, actually. But, you know, either one of you could actually throw a curveball when it comes to who the most valuable contributor will be. I have a feeling I know who it's going to be. But, you know, let's just face it. Jessica actually has that particular routine. Jessica, the show summation, please.
Yeah, all right. So in our first half hour, we started off with Kathy's cryptic crossword clue. The clue was duty-free, five letters. And Fia ended up figuring it out. It was no tax. Speaking of Fia, She's coming up to her last match for the korfball season, and they are hopefully going to be champions tonight. So good luck to Fia. She's had a good streak this far. Anna had an interesting warm weather week as well and met up with some childhood friends for a picnic at Kew Gardens. I love that we're getting into picnic and garden season. It's great. Elena Parsons from Caxton joined us then to discuss finance and travel costs. How much money do we lose on trips to ATM transaction fees? People are becoming more aware of how these costs build up, especially as we deal with things like inflation continuing and our food prices rising. Some tips that Elena gave us are start budgeting for your trip early on. Don't wait. Travel costs aren't just your travel, your tickets for the planes and accommodation, but also your daily spending too. Be aware of how small things add up and scope out the best times to purchase currency, which is not at the airport exchange desk. Remember that ATMs come with fees now on top of the account provider charging a fee as well. Always pay in the local currency, and getting a Caxton prepaid currency card and preloading it with money can also help, as ATM currencies has no ATM fees and can help with budgeting. In the studio, we all had experience with exchanging currency, from Victoria living in France to Kathy going to Ukraine, so we can vouch for the complications of finance abroad. In our second half hour, Thomas Morton from the Starlink Planetarium joined us to chat, and we'll be at the Newark Book Festival on July 9th. Starlink was begun by Thomas's father and his love for space travel and astronomy. He was able to bring enthusiasm for learning about space to schools through the planetarium. There's been an increase in learning about space, and Thomas hopes that the planetarium will help inspire students to explore astronomy and get interested in it. Thomas said that discussing the size of the solar system with school children is one of the most interesting aspects of understanding space, as it's mind-blowing to imagine the scale, which I think is always one of the craziest things about it. If you want to go stargazing as well, he said you don't need fancy equipment. You can just buy a pair of good binoculars and start learning from there. YouTube also has many informative videos about learning constellations and rocket science, too. In our third half hour, Grace Jackson, a 9-year-old author of the book Dogtopia, joined the show. She said that her inspiration came from visiting her grandparents in England every year when she wrote down a rough draft of her book while on a trip. Luckily, the Newark Book Festival was happening at the same time, and their website helped Grace learn to publish her own book. She even went to the bookshops herself to give them copies to put on the shelves. Dogtopia was inspired by Sugar, Grace's dog, and Grace made the book hoping that everyone will read it, but especially her dogs, who like to read with her. She hopes to inspire other kids to enter their work into competitions or other events and show off what they've made. She'll be at an interview coming up at the Newark Book Festival at the library meeting room. You can look forward to hearing more of Grace's thoughts and inspiration. An important warning, though, from Grace, do not read the book if you are afraid of Nutella, oranges, or puppies. But if you like dogs and are slightly evil, read the book, preferably not drunk. In our fourth half hour, Thomas Taylor joined us with a book-filled background. He'll be on an upcoming panel called The Battle of the Genre, where he must defend children's books against others like romance and crime, which is very fitting as he's produced mystery books for young readers called Eerie on Sea. It's set in a magical seaside town out of season during bad weather. Herbert Lemon and Violet Palmer, which we learned are candies in England, must solve a series of paranormal mysteries in this seaside town. Thomas was inspired by his own experience moving to the seaside and getting to see what it's like during the colder months off season. Some of his inspirations in writing include Tolkien and Pratchett, ghost stories, and others that are hard to pick from. I like how Thomas noted that books as a child that open up the world of storytelling can stick with us all our lives and keep drawing us back like magic. I think that's quite an experience that most people relate to. So for the award, the contributor of the week, it has to go to Grace, our 9-year-old author.
Yeah, I thought it was a done deal. I could almost hear that was a case of points. Yeah. Sorry, Phil, I know you were a brave attempt to actually get in and claim that back, but looks as though it was Grace. When you're up against a child, it's like having a cute kitten, you know, same thing.
Or a cute puppy.
Exactly.
I didn't let Fuzz on camera. I mean, that really killed my chances.
Yeah, that was silly of you, really, Phil.
It's not
Why are we hearing the song sung by whales right now in the background? That's weird.
Are we?
I don't think so.
Whale song.
Nobody else heard that? That was very strange. And when I say we, I'm using we the same way that Jessica uses.
Yeah, very true. Still, Phil, any closing thoughts from your good self on this June the 14th, 2023 edition of the Midweek Drive Live? Other than, of course, you can always catch up with more Phil, Linus Goodness and Dean Haglund with, of course, Chilpack Hollywood by simply going to chilpackhollywood.com.
You know, I had thoughts, and then I got so carried away by Jessica's recounting of what a good show it was, and I'm sorry that I besmirched the show in any way. But I would say this about your musical selection. Every day I write the book. It's just a little personal thing. Absolutely true. Again, I'll tell you a joke some other time so you can tell the difference when I'm truthful or not. I always have wanted to have on my tombstone the words, "In a perfect world where everyone was equal, I'd still own the film rights and be working on the sequel."
Nice.
That's what I plan to have on my tombstone. Yeah. Yeah.
Good Elvis Costello quotes. That.
Which is really weird because, of course, I also plan on never dying.
A good plan.
I mean, it seems like it's working so far.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes, I have so totally not died.
I mean, impressive, really.
Yeah, impressive. I mean, when you start to look at the numbers, and I don't just mean age. I mean, you know,
you're truly going against the odds
and blood
here.
Pressure. Oh my goodness, yeah. Yeah, never tell me the odds, Kathy.
I would never.
Tomorrow morning, the Midweek Drive Morning Edition Live will feature Kathy Manser. Probably not Phil, nor indeed Jessica, because it'll be 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning where they happen to be, or maybe even earlier.
It's just an excuse, Alex.
Oh, but Kay Adams will be joining us, TV personality and indeed proud Scot. Apparently over half of the people in the United Kingdom say they're proud of their regional accent. However, a quarter of us say they change their accent at work. People in London, Essex and Yorkshire are most likely to change their accent to avoid embarrassment. We'll find out more about that. Plus, we have the wonderment of Phil Herdwood joining us as a voiceover artiste. William Sitwell will be back on the programme, and Tim Slight will be talking about the Lincolnshire Show in a piece that Kathy and myself did earlier, another sort of wee side of things. So Tim was all set and ready to go. Plus, of course, the wearing sunscreen importance will be raised by Dr. Heva Vasihi. That's it, basically. Thank you to the team. Thank you, certainly, Phil Leonis. Have you enjoyed your contribution to the Midweek Drive Live as ever, Phil?
Yes, this was a lot of fun. It was wonderful getting to look forward to it, and I'm glad that I made it in time to meet the 9-year-old author and find out what her inspirations were when she was growing up.
Kind of Josephine 90, as I can refer to her.
Way to put pressure on, like, this poor 9-year-old author, Jessica's going to have, like, a midlife crisis at 13.
Yeah,
I mean, I think she did really well.
Look, you know, yeah, like, when you're 9, I feel like those each age, when you're growing up, the books feel so different. You're like, I'm not just reading, like, a picture book anymore. I'm reading, like, a 9-year-old book. That was a big deal for me growing up.
So true. So that's it. Split Ends, an Australian band, is taking us out with I Got You. Kathy, Phil, and Jessica, can we say bye-bye?
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's all I want. I won't forget. That's a whole lot. I don't go out. Not now that you're in. Shout. But that's no problem.